Lloyd is a fictional character, but what they went through is happening across Northwest today. This is their story. Transport planning in Stretford and Urmston faces the familiar pattern of unmet need alongside unused capacity, where qualified professionals and available equipment remain idle, while communities lose essential connections. Lloyd's experience reveals how Treasury spending rules create artificial barriers between people who want to work and the public services their neighbours desperately need.
I've loved public transport since I was 8 years old, watching the Metrolink extension being built through Stretford. The sight of those yellow construction vehicles laying track felt like watching the future arrive. My mum used to joke that other kids collected football stickers while I collected timetables. By the time I was studying transport planning at Manchester Metropolitan University, I knew I wanted to spend my life connecting people to the places they needed to go. My sister Emma was born with spina bifida, and watching her navigate our area taught me something they don't cover in the textbooks. Independence isn't just about having a job or a social life. It's about knowing you can get to the shops, the doctor, your friends, without having to ask someone else for help every single time. Emma could manage the tram fine, but our estate was a 20-minute walk from the nearest stop. For someone using a wheelchair, 20 minutes becomes 40, and 40 minutes in bad weather becomes impossible. After university, I worked briefly for Transport for Greater Manchester before moving into community transport coordination. That's where I spotted the gap. The new Metrolink stops were brilliant, but half the estates in Stretford were still cut off from them. I could see exactly what we needed. A community bus service running every 30 minutes, connecting the housing estates to Stretford tram stop. Nothing fancy. Just a reliable link that would give people like Emma real choices about how to travel. I started with Trafford Council. The transport planning officer, Sarah Mitchell, listened patiently to my proposal. I had route maps, passenger projections, even quotes from local bus operators. She nodded along, made notes, then said the words I'd hear many more times. There is no funding for new transport initiatives due to central government funding cuts. It sounded reasonable. Everyone knew councils were under pressure. I accepted it and moved on. The Department for Transport had a rural mobility fund that seemed perfect. I spent weeks filling out their application, detailing how the service would improve access to employment and healthcare. The rejection letter was brief. Stretford didn't qualify as rural. Fair enough, I thought. Rules are rules. Greater Manchester Combined Authority was my next stop. Andy Burnham had been talking about transport inequality, so I was optimistic. The meeting was with David Thompson, their transport strategy manager. He liked the idea, understood the need, but explained they were constrained by Treasury spending rules and couldn't fund local routes that didn't meet strict cost-benefit ratios. The mathematics were clear, not enough passengers initially to justify the investment. I walked away thinking the system was tough but logical. Then I started noticing things that didn't fit. 3 doors down from me lived Mike, an experienced bus driver who'd been out of work for 8 months. Across the street was Janet, another driver, signing on at the job centre twice a week. Round the corner was Paul, 20 years behind the wheel, now doing shifts at a warehouse because there were no driving jobs available. 3 qualified, experienced drivers within 100 yards of my front door, all wanting to get back to the work they knew and loved. I mentioned this to a mate who worked maintenance at the old Urmston depot. He laughed bitterly. "We've got 12 buses sitting in there doing nothing," he said. "Perfect condition, just had their MOTs, but there's no funding for additional services, so there they sit." I asked if I could see them. We walked through the depot yard on a Saturday afternoon, 12 blue buses in neat rows, clean, ready, going nowhere. The final piece fell into place at Trafford College. I was walking past and saw a sign for their transport planning course. I'd always meant to look into teaching, so I popped in to chat with the tutor, Margaret Walsh. Her classroom had space for 20 students, but only 6 were enrolled. "The demand is there," she said. "I get calls every week from people wanting to join. But the government cut the skills funding, so we can only take 6. The rest go on a waiting list that never moves." I sat in that half-empty classroom looking at the empty chairs, and something clicked. 6 people learning transport planning when 14 more wanted to join. 3 qualified drivers on my street with no work. 12 buses in the depot with nowhere to go. A whole community needing better connections to the tram network. All the pieces were there, lined up and waiting. That afternoon, I walked past the old rail maintenance facility near Trafford Park. It's been mothballed for 3 years now, but you can see through the fence that all the equipment is still there. Lifting gear, diagnostic computers, workshop tools, everything needed to maintain rolling stock. The building is solid, the power is still connected, but the gates are locked because there's no money to run training programs for rail engineering. Standing at that fence, I finally understood what I was really looking at. The people existed, the skills existed, the equipment existed, the need existed. What didn't exist was the political will to connect them. Every person who'd told me there is no funding had been describing a choice, not a fact. The government that issues the pound had chosen not to spend the pounds that would put Mike back behind the wheel of one of those 12 buses, serving the route that Emma and hundreds like her needed to reach the tram stop. I used to accept the excuse that there was no money. I hear it differently now. The government that prints the notes and mints the coins told me it could not find enough of them to train the people who were standing right there, ready to work. The real question was never about money. It was about whether the people existed, whether the skills could be taught, whether the buses were available. They were, all of them. The excuse was not a fact. It was a choice wrapped in the language of impossibility. It is the same logic as a household that says we cannot afford it, except a household does not issue its own currency. The government does. The limit was never the money. The limit was the willingness to spend it into the places and the people who needed it. I'm still here, still watching, still pushing for that bus service. But now I understand this isn't just about Stretford, or even just about transport. It's about every constituency where people and needs exist side by side, while someone in Westminster says the cupboard is bare, when they hold the key to the cupboard and the power to fill it.
What Lloyd experienced has a name: logical fallacy. A logical fallacy occurs when someone uses flawed reasoning to reach a conclusion, often by making false comparisons between fundamentally different things. Comparing a goldfish bowl to the Pacific Ocean because both contain water ignores the vast difference in scale and complexity. Similarly, every time Lloyd heard "there is no money," officials were making a false analogy between government budgets and household budgets. When Trafford Council cited central government funding cuts, when Greater Manchester Combined Authority mentioned Treasury spending rules, when the Department for Transport applied cost-benefit ratios designed to limit spending, they were all treating the UK government as though it were a household trying to save up for an extension. But households must earn or borrow the money they spend. Governments that issue their own currency create money when they spend it. The 12 buses sat unused not because pounds were scarce, but because Treasury doctrine demanded they remain idle. The half-empty training course existed not because resources were limited, but because the false household analogy justified artificial scarcity. The UK government issues its own currency. It does not need to find pounds before it spends them. The real constraint is resources: people, skills, materials, time. And in Lloyd's constituency, those resources were sitting idle. The resources existed, the people existed. The decision not to connect them was political, not financial. Stretford and Urmston ranks 226 out of 543 English constituencies on the deprivation index. English Indices of Deprivation, 20-25, MHCLG. The constituency has 740 registered charities, Charity Commission Register. Total grants received amount to £15.1 million, 360 giving grant NAV. All sources are published at blockedbritain.co.uk. Blocked Britain tells the stories of people whose lives are shaped by the gap between what Britain needs and what its institutions choose to provide. Every character is fictional. Every situation is drawn from official statistics, produced by Blocked Britain.